Just a word to begin with is about our lectionary. So we follow the new revised lectionary, which most mainline Protestant churches and the Catholic Church follow for the church year. And we've been in the season of Easter and Pentecost and Trinity. And now we enter what's called ordinary time, or in the Episcopal Church, we call it the season after Pentecost. Because we do nothing ordinary about it. We also have the option during the summer to choose between two different Old Testament readings and two different Psalms. And one track follows Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, those first books of the Bible. The other track follows the prophets, both the major prophets and the minor prophets, mostly the minor prophets, which we don't hear from all the time. But this year, we will be hearing from the minor prophets, ones maybe you've not heard of, Hosea, Joel, Zechariah, Amos. So pay attention to that. That's what our Old Testament readings will consist of this year, because last year we did the Genesis tract. So every other year is how we do it. Just wanted you to know what's going on. We also go back to hearing from the Gospel of Matthew. We'd been hearing from the Gospel of John all during the Easter season, and now we will be looking at the Gospel of Matthew. So, and speaking of Matthew, we hear about him today, how he was called by Jesus and he got up and followed him. Now, I suppose Matthew could have waited until he knew more about Jesus. Maybe he should have waited until he felt better about himself. He might have waited until he had cleaned up his act and delayed until a more opportune time when he could have presented himself in a better light to Jesus. And then that night, he might have wanted to spruce up the house a bit, work on his guest list, email everyone to make sure certain people were available for the dinner that night. But there was no time. It is remarkable, after all, that people apparently dropped everything to become a follower of Jesus. Peter, James, and John left the nets and their father in the boat. Matthew left his money counting and tax collecting. We may imagine that these disciples were the sort of folk who had nothing to lose, but they were not. They had families and responsibilities and financial obligations. Even if Matthew's profession was not a respected one in his culture, it was lucrative enough that he owned a home large enough to invite many of his friends for dinner. Now, Matthew could have at least waited until he thought it over, paused until he was more sure of this step, perhaps slept on it until he had worked out the details. So could we. But then, why miss a good party? Why not sit down and eat together? When I was in Peru in 1985, I noticed right away how differently the people there dealt with time. It wasn't that they were not busy. They were. And in some cases, their very survival depended on things like getting the harvest in. They were busy, but they seemed to have a different sense of priority. Often I marveled at how they would stop what they were doing. I mean, really stop. Put the tools down and sit on the stoop and talk and listen. In our case, perhaps put the keyboard away, shut off the cell phone, take out the earbuds, sit down on the stoop and talk and listen. The way that Isabel, the mother of the family I was staying with, listened to my grammar poor Spanish made me feel like I was the most important person in the world. I don't recall anyone I had ever known, including my own mother, listening to me in so attentive a way. Recently, you may know that I went back for a visit after 40 years, and it was the same. The loving presence of Isabel is a force to be reckoned with. Long moments while we were talking when she held my hand. Now, the novelist and pastor Frederick Buechner says, faith is the direction our feet start moving when we find that we are loved. Faith is the direction our feet start moving when we find that we are loved. Perhaps Matthew's encounter with Jesus was something like that. Jesus calling him, noticing him, singling him out and loving him, looking him in the eye. Something about Jesus lit a spark in Matthew, softened and inspired him all at once. So he did what was natural. He threw a party and dinner too. There's an intimacy in sharing a meal together, especially back in those days. That is why the Pharisees object to who Jesus is eating with, tax collectors and sinners. We are not sure what sort of sinners these were at Matthew's house. Perhaps they were all sorts and varieties, just like us. We might like to think that they were prostitutes and thieves and really bad people. But it is more likely that they were people who, for any myriad of reasons, were not able to observe the purity laws. That is, they worked with farm animals, or they collected taxes, or they were just simply poor and could not afford the cleansing rituals that were required by the Pharisees. Jesus chooses a blatant kind of befriending by eating with the likes of these. It might even be a civil disobedience protest kind of intimacy. But I bet the food tasted good, and I bet there was a lot of it. Yes, there is something intimate about eating together, and there is also something about eating together that makes us all equal. When we eat together, we all sit at the same level, eat the same fare, dip our bread in the same bowl. There is something deeply human about the sharing of food, and something that unites us and equalizes us, softens us, and opens us. We pour a little wine and raise a glass to the same effect. Lest you think I was just hungry when I wrote this sermon, I want you to think about St. Luke's Church. One of the powerful things I have noticed in recent years is that we like food, and we never seem to run out of food, whether at a picnic or a welcome dinner or a dinner to celebrate baptisms. When we share a meal, we seem more equal, more united, a bit easier with each other. When there is food, more people show up. This has allowed me to come to believe or perceive that feeding people and eating together is a particular charism of this parish. A charism is a spiritual gift, closely linked to the word charisma, and also the word chrism, which is about healing. It's a healing charisma. I hope that we can explore ways to further use this gift, develop and nourish this particular charisma. It is not a gift that every parish has. I assure you, it is more significant than that. With this gift, we could wait around until we get it just right, check our guest list, or we could be like Matthew, in faith, simply step out and do this. Feed people, share our food, our meals, and throw a party. When I was serving a church in Kalamazoo, Michigan, there was a little 4-year-old girl named Kathy who, every time she received Holy Communion, for some reason, she would giggle. It was kind of a low-pitch giggle for such a little girl. Sounded like, Her parents, kneeling on either side of her at the rail, would try to shush her, but it was too late. As I tried to suppress my own grin, I could look down the rail and see shaking shoulders, snickers and grins, and even an occasional snort would ripple down the rail like a wave through water. Sometimes people would even giggle in anticipation of Kathy's giggle. Just thinking about it was infectious. And I thought this banquet this Holy Eucharist is the great equalizer, where we all open our hands and become like children, and sometimes giggle, young and old, black and white, rich and poor, standing or kneeling together. And so we say all are welcome at this table, which is more than a worn-out slogan. It is our charism, our gift, this table where we gather, where the food never runs out, where sinners of every stripe are fed and noticed and loved, where our feet start moving into the direction of Jesus. This Eucharist meal, the great equalizer, where Christ is our ever-present and very special guest of honor.